Good morning, friends. It's good to see all of you. Just a heads up, tonight we have the opportunity to do one of our Mars Hill meetups. We will be at Dutton Park, kind of on the south side of town, from 5 to 7. With a little potluck style. We did those potlucks throughout the winter. We're going to try a summer one as well. So keep an eye out for that if tonight from 5 to 7 at Dutton Park, if that sounds like a good time to you. And it'll be great. With that, we are continuing our series in the Shema. Listen, awaken your hearts and ears to what God is saying. And so with that, we've engaged this practice of throwing our pinkies in the air. I told my daughter this. She's like, "You having a big tea party?" She said, "No." But similarly, I would just invite you to stand. We're going to say this text together. And we've done it now for a few weeks. That why don't we try it first in Hebrew and then in English, right? So we have the transliteration right there on the screen. And with the pinky, we're saying with this that we're reminded by this text that God has more power in his little finger than all the nations of the world. So let's say this together first in Hebrew, and then we'll do it in English. Ready? Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God, the Lord is one. The word of the Lord. Please be seated. So it was about 10 years ago, maybe 12, much like our students this week, we were in Colorado. My wife Allie and I were leading a trip of students on a multi-day backpacking adventure. And it was on our third day that we stopped for the night. We gather up some wood for a campfire, and we're sitting around with some of these middle school and high school students. And a young man named Soren begins to talk late into the night about how someday he's going to ask Susan to prom. Now, Susan is way out of his league and going to be in 12th grade, and Soren is going to be in 8th grade. And he just goes on and on. He's like, "This is going to be it. This is my year. It's going to happen." And Susan wasn't there. And finally, the folks around the campfire were like, "Dude, no, not a chance. Not going to happen." He tries again. And they say, "No way." And then we have silence for like 20 seconds. Then out of Soren's hammock, you hear this resolute, "The heart wants what the heart wants." The heart wants what the heart wants. The heart, that's what we're getting at this morning. After that line, we said, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart." In the Hebraic understanding, the heart is the seat of your emotions, your thoughts, even kind of your intellect and reasoning. It's where you think and feel and react. And the heart of the first of these three moves us into depth of the soul and into action and our strength. But the heart begins this movement. God is inviting Israel to respond with their whole heart, respond to God's faithfulness and love by offering back, kind of with their whole selves, everything to God. In Hebrew, this is levav. Can we say it together? Levav. And we're going to get some our hands and bodies involved here. So let's just put our hands, hearts. We're going to do a hand and a heart. Our second one for today, it's going to be eyes. Vision, yeah. And then our third that we'll get to later, it's like this. Right, one more time. One, two, three. It's awesome. Great. God is inviting us to use this heart, emotions, reasoning, intellect, to love. And not just with part of heart, but with whole heart. Heart, in this case, is the most used anthropological term in the scriptures. It's over 1,000 times we see the heart referenced in the sacred text. Like it's a central part of what we're to be about as those who follow God's heart. And it begins kind of this cascade of calling one's self to love God with heart and with soul and with strength. The heart matters. But can the heart be aimed? Can it be commanded to obey in such a way? Or does simply the heart want what the heart wants? I think this text really illuminates the truth here for us. So let's take a deeper look. On the screen, you'll see this is kind of the whole of the Shema as we find it in Deuteronomy. It says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all of your heart, and with all of your soul, and with all of your strength. These commandments that I give today to you today are to be on your hearts." There it is again. "Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along. Tie them as a symbol on your hands and bind them on your foreheads and write them on the door frames of your house and on your gates." There's a lot going on here, but first I want to talk about love. Verse 5, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart." Or as many of you may have heard it in the days of yesteryear, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart." This commanding language. But I think there's something that we need, the scripture offers us a nuance here that we need to understand in order to love with our whole selves as we move through this text. So this section right there, "Love the Lord your God," or what you may have known as "you shall love the Lord your God," is in a specific Hebrew verb tense called the cohortative, which means it's inevitably completed action, which that's something worth chewing on. But what it means is it's a tense that's used by the prophets later in the Old Testament that are trying to woo the hearts of the people back to God. The prophets with no social power are not the ones commanding the king to love, but it's kind of this grand invitation, wooing the heart back to say, so this text very well may read, "Oh, that you would love the Lord your God." It strikes a little bit of a different tone that I think maybe opens the heart for some of us. "Oh, that you would come and love the Lord your God with all your heart." Instead of an imperative, this text is speaking to us invitation. So if you're coming out of a faith tradition or even just a season where love of God seems more like a duty than delight, I just invite you to hear this invitation and let that open something inside of you to love God with your entire heart in a fresh way. But the heart is not alone in this text. We see it connected eventually with our eyes. So look, this next slide here, we have "love the Lord your God with all of your heart." All right, these commandments that I give you today are to be on your hearts. So there's something going on here. And then, you know, "impress them on your children. Talk about them on your way." The things you would do if these commandments are in your heart, talk about them. Talk about them with your kids. Talks about the mezuzah on our door frames that we have here too. And then this idea of binding them on your arms, I get that, right? Like quarterbacks have the little playbook and stuff on their arms, so there's something to that. But then there's this strange line, "bind them on your foreheads." Now, a closer look would reveal that there's no word for forehead in the Hebrew language. So what do we do with this? What this is saying is it's more like in the Spanish language, you have this idea of glasses, right? Ante ojos, before your eyes. That's more of what this text is getting at, because there's no physical word for the forehead. And so what God is saying here is take these words and put them in front of your eyes, not as a blocker, but so that you see the entire world through the lens of loving God with your whole heart and your whole soul and your whole strength. And so it's not like we have this divided vision where I see part of the world not through the love of God and part of the world through it. But this is an invitation to say, I want you to see the whole of life through the idea of loving God and neighbor with your whole heart. And there's a connection that begins here but doesn't stay here. between our heart, remember motion one, are you with me? And eyes, motion two. Heart and eyes are inextricably connected here and throughout the scriptures. It's your eyes that give the vision for life. And they see what the heart wants, right? Soren sees prom with Susan as a possibility because it's in his heart. And so there's this connection here. And we see that actually the text continues in this way. So this takes us through verse 9 and Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 10, 11, and 12. That's our next slide here. It says this, God will bring you into a land with large flourishing cities that you did not build, houses filled with all kinds of good things that you did not provide, wells that you did not dig, and vineyards and olive groves that you did not plant, and you will eat and be satisfied. This idea that God talks about the heart and then the eyes and then actually gives the vision for the good life, one of provision, security, abundance, belonging, and power is all right here. Somehow knowing that if we engage our hearts in love of God, that it gets our vision cranking so we can see what is to be or what we long to be. The heart and our vision. The heart talk here is followed by a vision for life. What happens in the heart when it loves God gets itself worked out in what we see. The condition of our hearts, this is inviting us to consider, informs what we see as beautiful, how we see success, how we see what the good life is. So God paints a picture of it right after the Shema, saying, these are the things I will give you to flourish. Heart and vision, heart and eyes. There's something about this that works its way through the text. Let's look at a couple other texts. This is Proverbs 23. My child, give me your heart and let your eyes delight in my ways. Oh, that the eyes of your heart would be opened. And blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. The Shema is trying to get this into our system, into our bodies, that what happens here, what we love, informs what we see, how we see. But the opposite is true too. What we see, what we fix our eyes on, what our vision is for life, informs the shape and character of our heart. And that's what this beginning part of the Shema is trying to get at for us, asking us the question, is there congruency between your vision for life and God's vision for your life? Is there alignment there between your heart and God's heart? What we see, we love, and what we love is what we see. One follows the other. But if you're like me, oftentimes we get this mixed up, right? We fix our eyes and our vision and therefore our hearts on things that may not be part of God's heart. Wednesday night, I got a text. This buddy of mine, he sent me a link to Toyota's website because the 2020 Tundra pickup trucks just went online. Right? And you can order, you can pre-order a 2020 Tundra TRD Pro with the factory 550 horsepower supercharger and the Fox long travel shocks. If you view Chicago Drive as the Baja 1000, you too can have this. And I began thinking, man, that kind of stuck in my mind. And the next day I was driving, I was like, yeah, I'm picturing myself in that ride, right? Finances aside, you know, practicality aside, that's the one. And it began to infiltrate its way into my vision, so much so that I can tell you far more specs than I just did. But I'm not alone in that. There's these things that creep our way into the vision of the good life, and they begin to work their way into us so that when we picture what thriving and provision and success and blessing is in our vision for our life, there's these pieces that may or may not be congruent with God's heart. You may have a 2020 Tundra on order. That's cool. But it just wasn't the thing that was the right move for our family, right? And so, but it began this kind of diagnostic process of saying, what is my heart tuned towards seeing? What's the vision that my heart is bringing to bear on life? What's a part of that? Who's a part of that? And as this fall, as we move towards house churches and kind of renewing that around the city, we're asking, are there some people who can help cultivate a vision for your neighborhood with you? Who can help you diagnose the congruency of vision and heart? That's a vulnerable space, but it's worth entering. And so it may not be a new pickup truck or a new ride, but these things that kind of get into our vision and co-opt our heart, anything from houses, jobs, spouses, the right gaming console, if I could just get that. Right? Or this promotion, or this many followers, or whatever it is that kind of begins to permeate your vision for what life ought to be and actually starts to shape your heart a little bit, needs to be questioned. And that's why they say the Shema every day, multiple times a day. So that every day you say, oh, that you would love the Lord your God with all your heart. Is there alignment between your heart and vision for life and the heart of God and God's vision for your life? It's an uncomfortable question for many of us. But I think it's right in the middle of this daily prayer so that we constantly ask it. Does your heart long for what God's heart longs for? The Shema reminds us here that we need kind of a fresh and consistent orientation, reorientation of our hearts, right? If you think of this almost as a compass that points towards something, it points towards your vision of what the good life is. And that's why daily we say this prayer. And weekly, we come here to the table and encounter the Word of God so that we are remembering, like in Deuteronomy 6, 10, 11, 12, who gives provision, where life truly comes from, and allow God to shape that heart so that our vision for life and ministry and family, neighborhood, relationships, and work finds closer alignment with the kingdom of God so that blessing may flow to and through us to the world so that we can be more readily recognized as a Jesus people for the sake of the world. In just a few minutes, we'll move into our communion liturgy. We'll say, the Lord be with you and also with you. We'll say, lift up your, and we lift them up to the Lord. And so, friends, I want us to encounter that space as those who have recognized the invitation of our hearts, throw hands, hearts, see the connection to the vision, right? How what's in here informs how we see the world, and what we see informs what's in here, so that we can then, this is our third motion, right? Lift up our hearts to God and ask, Lord, would you shape this and form it, reorient this part of me to a fresh vision of your kingdom? And would you remove the pieces of my vision for my life that are not congruent with your heart? And so, when we say lift up your hearts, and then we all say we lift them up to the Lord, I'm going to ask us to just pause for 20 or 30 seconds. It's not going to be a shoulder workout, but to, you know, and just have a moment of with body and soul, saying, Lord, here is my heart. Would you shape that so that I can truly say, I love God with my entire heart and my vision for life? Would you shape my vision? Would you shape my heart? And then we get to worship and be provided for and then be a sent people who can work out that vision in the world. What a gift this prayer offers us. Heart shaping is not easy. And it's not always fun. But what a gift that the God of the universe says, I want to be intimately involved with your heart and your vision for life. So much so that we can say the weight is off. There's a word of grace here. That God says, I will give you a vision. Right? To a people wandering in the desert who are saying, where's my meal, my security, my city? Where is this all going to come from? God immediately follows saying, I will give it to you. You have cities that you didn't build, cisterns that you did not dig, olive trees and fruit that you didn't plant. And so as we lift up, we offer back to the Lord and also know that God is the one who likes to bless his children and we can receive to bless the world. So that at the end of today and of praying this prayer again and again and again, that we may be those who say, it's not just the heart wants what the heart wants, but truly my heart wants what God's heart wants. May my heart want what God's heart wants.